Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DC universe. I'm Alex Gunn, a son of a gun.
I'm Justin Gunn, one of the sons of one gun.
Whoa, I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about the season finale of Creature Commandos, Episode 7, A Very Funny Monster. If you haven't watched it on Max, do go watch it because we're going to spoil it starting right now. In the finale episode, everything coalesces on Princess Alada's castle.
Yes.
In Polkolistan.
It's a Nina episode.
As the Creature Commandos try to kill her, Frankenstein tries to reconnect with the bride, and the folks back in America try to stop them because before they cause an international incident. It leads to Nina's death by the end. We also get her flashback and origin story here. And at the end of the episode, the bride ends up killing Alana because, in fact, she was going to destroy the world. And we get one last teaser here that they're going to form a new team of Creature Commandos at the end. That is the broadest of overviews of what happens in the episode, but lots to talk about here, not only the episode, but also the season, and also this as a kickoff for James Gunn's DCU. Now, he has referred to it as an aperitif before the main meal.
Definitely. My appetite is wet following this.
I definitely know what that means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually something. It sounds like after, but it's actually something before.
Mm-hmm. Right, like a light Jello.
It's like.
Are you eating Jello before dinner?
Oh yeah, it's a nice light aperitif.
Have you ever been to dinner with Pete? Because he always orders Jello for the table.
Always.
Are you eating in a Jello hospital or retirement home exclusively?
Hey, you know.
Yeah,
the idea of you flexing out to dinner and being like, can I get a little light Jello for my table? My friends here at the table, some light Jello, please. Yeah.
I believe when I went out to dinner with Pete the other day, he saw a bread bowl in the center and was like, what is this, hard Jello or something like that? And I was like,
yeah,
no,
all foods are various shades of Jello when you think about it.
Well, definitely. What kind of Jello was this episode and season? Justin, you got some hot takes. Lay it on
us. I'm just so happy we got to finally take down the absolute monster of this show. And of course, I'm talking about Nina. What a pleasurable death. Really deserved everything she got in this.
I mean, it sounds like we were talking about this a little bit over the weekend. We're taping this obviously a little later than when it aired, and we haven't had to chat about it in person. You feel like it veered very negative over the course of the show. I feel like that was your big takeaway, right, Justin?
Well, I guess this episode was the final, it felt like a final statement on a theme or idea that was boiling over the second half of the season, which was life sucks. Yep. Do whatever you want, but it will end badly for you no matter what, badly and randomly. And the Nina story, like all of the backstories were deeply tragic and sort of purposefully horrible to the characters. You know, they were stories well told, but
you don't
think
Nina's a little bit more than others?
Yes, I do. That's what I'm saying. Like, it got harsher over the course of the season from their backstories. And then on top of that, we get like this horrible outcome for her. And it just felt like, what was the point of this character at all? At the end of the day, this like innocent who was thrown on this team, who felt like, I don't want to kill people. I'm not built for this. And they give her one mission, which we already know we think is not what she's supposed to do, kill Alana. Then she's going to do it. And she just gets absolutely wrecked We don't get any sort of like, it was all worth it. It feels random and hurtful to me, the viewer, for being engaged in the story when it's just like, nope, the only person who was right was the bride. And what she does is just a sort of harshly kill. She's a callous over her feelings. And that's the right way to be, I feel like, what the show is telling us.
Yeah, the hard part for me was I was having a blast on this whole season, and that all came to a screeching halt with this last episode. And it left you just so kind of like, what? I don't even know if I want to keep watching this show after this, because it was like, we have this, you know, Frankenstein's monster trying to be... He's in love with the bride. I don't know if he knows what love is or has any kind of a semblance or could be a good, you know, partner for the bride or whatever. But we're the struggle that gets not even because you're thinking, OK, at least they can have a conversation and she could be like, hey, leave me alone, you psychopath, but shoots him and then walks away and doesn't even hear his caution. Like he's trying to help, but with the, he has information that could help the team. It's just all horrible and sad and depressing. And then it's like, join us next season with a whole new team. And it was like, well, why would I want to go through that again? That was heartbreaking. That Nina story is heartbreaking. The mom leaving because her child is different and can't deal, that was heartbreaking. The fact that, like, Nina had to kill this person she thought was good and the weasel also liked for some random reason. It was just, it was so rough. It was hard to sit through, man. It was really hard to sit through.
I'm going to take a little bit of an alternate take for you guys, though. I agree in general it was mixed. My main issue here is this felt like a first or second draft of a show. So I would actually be okay with tuning into a second season now that they've worked through whatever they need to work through and they figure out maybe an actual story with consistent themes that aren't just giving us, like I've talked about before, sort of like these character one sheets as the backstories that don't necessarily connect to the main thrust of the episode. Like here we got Nina's backstory to show why she died. And like we've been talking about the entire time, why was she on this mission? Why was she thrown into prison for being a fish woman? None of that necessarily connects to anything other than to set up her dying. I've seen a lot of conversation about this online, and I don't 100% agree, but I understand the sentiment about, I think there was an article put up about James Gunn DCU is an equal opportunity fridger. And for anybody listening who doesn't know, this is a term that goes back to Gail Simone back in her journalism days, where she was talking about how mostly you kill the girlfriend. This is based on Kyle Rayner's girlfriend being stuffed in a fridge to motivate him as a hero. So it's called fridging. And that's all it is. Like, I think Nina was here to die to motivate the bride to kill Alana, period. That's pretty much all we got from it.
Also, yeah, but she was going to – I think feel like she would was going to do it anyway because that's
probably
the – fridging is bad as a storytelling device because it's cheap and it doesn't value the characters, usually women, in the story. And that is something that I think we as people want to see go away. But this is even worse, I think, because it's fridging but it's also – it's not even really motivating anybody. It just feels random. And that I'm like, what are we doing here? I just this left me with a bad taste in my mouth. And especially as a first statement for the new DCU, I was surprised to have this taste.
Also, why was
this
she
Jell-O, this bad Jell-O?
Don't
no
bring
such
Jell-O
thing.
In.
No such thing.
Don't bring Jell-O.
There's
in
only
this.
Good Jell-O. Everybody agrees.
Why was she given a knife? She can breathe underwater. Just grab her, pull her under the water. You're a monster, lives under the water. Done. You don't need a knife. There's no reason for you to have a knife. There was a lot of head scratching for me. But also, what's going to happen next season? Eric's going to come back alive and then chase down the bride and she's going to shoot him again? What are we doing?
Eric Frankenstein.
Yeah. I mean, just to talk about that moment for a second. I don't 100% agree with you.
We were spending so much time with them, and then they don't even pay it off at all.
It was a comedy beat, I think, to be like, we're building up to Frankenstein, and oops, he is completely dispatched in one scene. But I agree with you. There's no sense where he is a good guy, where he should be with the bride. You're 100% wrong about that beat. There's no hope of redemption for him or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's not – satisfying. Like, there's he's not there in the plot other than essentially killing time based on the fact that we're going over, like, we spent so much time with him, and to dispatch him in 1 second does not provide that closure. And in fact, we get an end credit scene where he's still alive and it's fine and he's going to continue. So they are going to continue with that comedy beat.
I just want to clarify to make sure that, because of what you said, I don't want to be, I don't think he deserves to be in this relationship or have a chance, but we've just been riding with him for so long. I want someone to say something to him to be like, yo, dude, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Get away from her. Do something else with your life. It's just so much time to spend to have that joke like you talked about.
Well, and I think if the idea – we've talked about how it felt like the season wanted to deal with toxic masculinity as an idea. We have the Sons of Themyscira, which kicked off the season, felt important. We get a little bits and pieces of that idea in this. But it feels like it didn't coalesce in general. It felt like it was all sort of put in the Eric Frankenstein character as someone who's – just killing indiscriminately to get to this woman who he treated horribly, and she's never really cares for him. Right. And so, like, but I think he's dispatched in a way that felt like this is what we should do when it comes to toxic masculinity, is kill it off and ignore it. But then we get this post-credit scene where he gets to be the funny part again, and he gets to continue on when a character like Nina that is just trying to be and trying to do what she needs to do to survive in a place that has treated her as a monster is killed off indiscriminately and then sort of like left. Even the bride who's meant to care for her is like, well, time to go on the next mission. It felt just like, what side are we landing on here if you are having Eric Frankenstein continue and be the comedy person?
I 100% agree with that. And just, I know I've been beating this toxic masculinity drum for the entire season. Looking at the season overall, it feels like they started with such a strong idea with being these soft boys who were clearly the proud boys coming in, going after women, being like, we deserve to be on an all-women island. Elana is a woman. The bride, the ostensible leader of the team, is a woman. And then slowly over the course of the season, they whittled out those elements to Cersei completely disappearing in the back half of the season, the soft boys essentially being a non-factor, and ending with the note of, oh, the woman is the ultimate villain and we shot her in the head, the end, threat over, is a weird place to end on. It feels like you started with the toxic masculinity thing, ended up with the very generic theme, I think, of like, who is the true monster here? Is it the monsters or the other people? And that to
even
me is,
that's not clean, though, because I hear I was trying to reckon with that as well, where it's like, oh, it's about like what is monsterhood, where like especially the Nina backstory, like she's born with her lungs outside of her body, something that is just, you know, doesn't make her a monster per se. It's something that she will physically struggle with in her life. The mom can't deal with that. That's monsterhood. The father, like, you know, alters her DNA and she becomes monstrous, quote unquote, looking outcast by society. And like at the end of the day, though, she's murdered and the woman who's the villain kills her. And it's like, so wait, she's like has a monstrous life and it ends. And Elana's more of a monster. And then the bride's the most monstrous because she kills her. I was like, none of this is getting to anything.
Yeah.
And that's upsetting because that felt like the one thing that they were really going to come home with, because it started in the monster idea.
Well, and it also they don't do a good job of driving it home. There was one of the exchanges I wrote down is when they're encouraging Nina to kill Elana. The bride, I believe, is like, you're a monster just like us. And then I think it's Dr. Foxer who says, you're the biggest freak of us all. And I was like, is she? I don't think so. She actually seems the most normal, down to earth. So what are
she's
we
She's the most
here?
Human. I think she's she was the show's humanity, it felt like, over the course of – she was one that was like, well, should we be doing this? I don't think we should just indiscriminately kill people. So it felt like she was the moral center, or the most quote-unquote human of all of the characters, human or monster. And then we get – it ends up being – she's like, well, fuck you to her for trying to be a good person. I was like, oh.
I agree with you. This is kind of an oops all monster situation, because like even the cop shooting the dad and the flashback scene of him running to his daughter to try to help.
So just to talk about that for a second, because I wrote that down as well.
Oops all monsters.
Well, maybe there is like a little bit of an ACAB thing going on here with the cops shooting the father, and in the previous episode, the cops going after Weasel instead of shooting the fire or whatever we joked about. But again, like, it's just sort of gesturing to it rather than hitting it in any way. And I think it is the same thing as this toxic masculinity thing. Like, if that's your theme, keep hitting it. Like, that is your theme. Go, go, go. You can't just be like, ACAB, what do we think?
I think it's...
Anyway, moving on with the monster theme.
The theme is everybody's monsters. Everything sucks. Hey, you want to see a second season of this?
Get ready for the new DCU. It's crazy, actually. I was thinking about it a little bit over the course of the week. It's crazy that we were like, whew, glad the DCEU is in the back rearview mirror, you know, with all of its darkness and Superman snapping people's necks. And they were like, here you go, Creature Commandos. Everybody dies. We're all monsters. Enjoy.
Surprisingly, Amanda Waller, who I normally consider a monster, was nice. I mean, she was staying by Flagside in the hospital. I was impressed by how much time she was putting in for somebody she previously would kill at a snap of.
Also, this picking up from the Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, she was mildly heroic and on the side of right here, which was surprising. So I agree with you, Pete. One random thing, just while I'm looking at my notes here and we're talking about Waller and Economos, they go to McPherson's house, find her dead, which... We should probably talk about Princess Alada's plan in a second, which is utter nonsense. Yeah. But they find dead Clayface there, which was very weird to me. That does not track with anything that we've seen in any iteration of Clayface before.
Well, I mean, I guess he sometimes leaves behind.
Yeah, he sheds. Yeah, he sheds. You know,
his face. He sheds his some face clay. And leaves it behind. I don't know.
I shed my face every now and again. Yeah, shed a face.
Yeah.
Get new face. I mean, he can technically, I think, in his power set, leave behind any part of his body.
Sure. I guess so. It was just, it seemed like they blasted him apart with electricity and now he's dead, which raises a lot of questions in my mind about the Clayface movie that they just greenlit. I guess we'll see what happens.
Well, and let me also say, like, Clayface is a fun character. Often, like, great backstory from Batman the Animated Series, or at least often an interesting henchman type. And in this, he was treated as, like, a monster, and then dispatched without any sort of, like, they could have used anyone to be that. Instead, they
There's a lot of questions there. Like, there was Cersei's vision, while we're jumping around a little bit, had Gorilla Grodd in it, who didn't show up at all. We have no sense of, like, the nuclear arsenal. There's a bunch of Justice League stuff that comes up. Like, we didn't follow up on the Metal Men or anything like that. So, like, I know they're setting up stuff for the DCU, and that's fine, but there's a lot of details that were thrown in there that feel like, I don't know.
Also,
kind of tossing stuff on the pile.
Ghost Rider got a funny shout out in this episode.
He did. That's like, a good joke. Show is up that, in Superman.
Is that legal? Can we even acknowledge Marvel on the DC project?
Do you want to go arrest them? Should we go do a citizen's arrest? You can't say that.
Hey,
James Gunn led out in handcuffs after mentioning Ghost Rider and Creature Commandos. Yes, of course they can do that. They can mention that. They mentioned Batman and Superman in Marvel projects all the time. By all the time, I mean just Eternals.
Yeah, I was going to say, just maybe once ever.
That's probably why I didn't catch it.
Can you imagine the high-flying vibe of them calling out Batman in Eternals and being like, and how that movie is like been completely just like forgotten, but the flex of calling, like referencing their competition. What a turn.
What a heel turn. Let's talk about Alana's plan, if that's all right.
Yes. And honestly, this is great. I think there's a lot of roots in strategy here. Mm-hmm. I think we can really identify.
So Alana's plan, the way the bride lays it out to her, was she was planning on attacking the world with her nuclear arsenal and turning it into a wreckage and taking over America, right? Like that's
what happened so fast. It was such a quick, I was just like,
so she's still definitely reeling from what happened. We know that she knew somehow, we don't know how, but somehow she knew that Cersei knew she was going to do that. Even though I don't think we've ever seen those two characters have a conversation. It was not clear that Cersei like had expressed that to her at any point, but she knew. Princess Alana knew.
And also, we don't know why Alana is trying to destroy the world.
Right.
It's just a random idea for her to kill everyone on Earth.
Exactly. Yeah. She wants to kill everybody on Earth. Cersei knew about it because she had a vision, so was taking these soft boys to invade Pakolistan, and somehow Princess Alana knew she had the vision and was trying to stop her. So she seduced Princess Alana, seduced Rick Flagg, to get him to kill Cersei, a thing that they were probably going to do anyway. And then at the last second, because Rick Flagg is a nice guy, did not want to do that.
Yeah.
So then they took Cersei back, found out about the vision that was confirmed by the real McPherson, who knows about Cersei and knows about Themyscira. And
this is a character that is like a scientist who confirmed a vision from an Amazonian witch sorceress who showed up from Themyscira, an island that no one knows is real.
Right, exactly. Yes, we're correct so far. And then Alana sent a spy from her end to America, saw that McPherson was there, and knew that what they needed to do was recruit Clayface, who she was working with, to kill McPherson and replace McPherson in order to make it seem like McPherson was always a fake, so that Waller would tell the creature commandos to not kill Princess Alana because it would put a shadow of doubt on the vision. But then the bride figured all that out, and that she actually wanted to do it, and so killed her.
How do you think they fit all that on a tiny note card in the writer's room?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
There's also a lot to get from one grainy image of the Clayface at a location.
None of this makes any sense. I'm just going to say, like, it is absolute nonsense, this whole plan, on every single part of it. It's based on coincidence and supposition, and I don't know if there was another plan that they were working on in the writer's room, by which I mean James Gunn at some point, but like, this doesn't work.
And it felt like it didn't need to be complicated. Like, literally everything could have just been like, she was evil the whole time and was trying to cover her ass.
Yeah.
If they had just sort of said that, rather than that, like, here's the plan.
She could have gone off on a villain monologue, like got frustrated and just started monologuing and just admitted, and then we could have been like, oh, great.
I'm just saying, definitely, but they just didn't need to say literally any of this because they hadn't set it up, really. So, like, it could have just been like, oh, you caught me. Yes, I had Clayface. I was trying to fix my mistakes with Clayface, and it didn't work. Done. Instead, they were like, this was the plan the whole time. I was like, what an unforced error. That's like someone in the Olympics taking the javelin and throwing it at their own face rather than.
Yeah, it didn't really work. It didn't really make sense. I mean, maybe they were setting something up that retroactively would be like, oh, there's a whole Legion of Doom thing, and Gorilla Grodd and Clayface recruited Princess Alana to take over the world, and this is all part of the story of Gods and Monsters Chapter 1 or whatever. But on the surface of the show, who cares, because it was nonsense.
Well, if that was the plan, then they also didn't do that well, because I'm trying to forget what you just laid out now. if they're like, okay, so remember that story? Then we see a flashback to that scene with the bride and Alana. I'm like, no, and don't you dare try to open this up again.
I do think, though, if in the future people just watch episodes 1 through 6, they'll be like, oh, this is fun show.
Man, I think inherently when it comes to a story, you're probably going to want to know how it ends.
Yeah, but I always throw away
a book before the final chapter because I'm like, I'm good, man. And it's the same thing with food.
You're not going to get
75% of my food, and then I push it off the table, and I'm like, bring on the Jell-O, bring on more Jell-O.
Yeah, exactly, more Jell-O. That's all I want. I eat the bones first.
The Jell-O bones.
Chicken. Yeah, the Jell-O bones. You ever seen a Jell-O in the wild? It's really cool. Oh,
tough to capture.
Very tough to capture.
Slippery.
Yeah. I one time, though, I was out hunting with my uncle. We shot a Jell-O, hung it up, field dressed it, got all the bones out of there, and just ate it over a campfire.
Yum, wow. Yum. So you didn't mount it.
That is
ironically, isn't Jell-O made out of bones?
It is. Yes.
It's horse bones.
Delicious.
How do you delicious horse bones, says Pete, a real person. Pete said you should eat Jell-O first before a meal. And he likes it. It's made out of horse bones.
Do you ever, when you're really hungry and you're walking along and you see a horse because you live in the country, do you ever look at it and like picture it as a big jello in the bowl?
Yeah, I always just, instead of a horse, I see a, like an orange block. And I'm like, oh, like, man, that's delicious.
Yum, yum. Man, I should take you to the racetrack. You're going to love the Kentucky Derby. Just a bunch of goopy jellos racing.
Do they let you get on the track and get a couple licks in before the race? Or what's the deal with that?
Yeah, you got to pay extra.
Yeah, you got to pay extra to lick the horse. Oh, and let me say, horses taste a lot different than jello. Just even the bones taste different.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. When do they add the flavoring, I wonder?
Right, yeah. At the end. What a weird idea.
If you go to the Kentucky Derby, you can see them feeding a lot of lives to horses because the losers are straight to the jello factory.
The jello factory. Who came up with jello? They're like, hey, guys, I figured out a way to use all these horse bones we had laying around. I made it into a pre-dinner snack.
If we would get back
bones,
to the show a little bit, I would like to say, though, that the opening credits were fun. They had some fun character choices and some amazing actors playing these parts.
What about the closing credits, huh?
Yeah.
Come on.
You know, there was some nice bright spots as far as, like, you know, the acting and the character actors that were kind of the voiceover actors, I should say. I'm surprised they would say yes to this, but it was great to hear them all.
In this final episode, I do think there's some interesting visual stuff. There's a Jaws reference. There's some good, interesting cutting back and forth between, like, using a water as an edit point between the Nina backstory and the present story. They built the tension of Nina trying to kill Alana well, I thought. It's just the outcome was such a bummer that it didn't really work. The Ghost Rider line I thought was funny. And something I wish they had sort of figured out a little bit better, using these characters' backstories. Like, we meet these characters, and they're, like, fun, sort of reckless, classic James Gunn comedy characters. Ragtag team. And then we find out that they have, like, deep tragedy underneath all of them. And the idea of learning that and then seeing them go on this final mission, I thought was a nice structure for a season. I wish they had somehow been able to pay off what they've been through as a traumatic or tragic and have them, their humanity emerge a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But in this final thing, Phosphorus is just an absolute maniac who just kills people indiscriminately. I was like, what?
Right. We didn't talk about Weasel. I mean, we got his arc was finally stepping up and trying to save the girl that he wasn't able to save back in the day, who he thought was Princess Alana. But of course, that leads to Nina's death, is the unfortunate, tragic side effect of that. I do think they got towards what Justin is talking about with the bride. She was the only one who really got an arc there, being created as a monster who was poor things baby style, to eventually by the end of the season crying and walking away and having some real humanity there. So I think that was the most successful, but to the point that you're making, Justin, they never gelled the flashbacks and the stuff in the present.
It's pronounced jelloed.
It was a bunch of horse bones. I think we can all agree that show.
I mean, honestly, that's a pretty good analogy. We wanted jello. We got horse bones. A tragic version of jello is just horse bones. Just flavorless horse bones. And that's what it feels like we got here. And just last character to talk about, Rick Flagg, like,
in a coma the entire time.
His whole purpose was to mumble one thing to Waller. She was like, ah, yes, Clayface did it. It's like, what? I was like, this guy, he doesn't even show up at the end.
Particularly because he's going to show up in Superbad and also Peacemaker Season 2. It feels like you already have a plan in place there for this character. Give us something. Like, he was the only one. We got this whole setup for Season 2. We've gotten all of these DCU teases, but he's like, barely awake, my back was broken. Is that going to pay off? Is it going to be like, ouch, my back in Superbad, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, it was almost like they got a note halfway through the season. It's like, hey, less Rick Flagg.
Mm-hmm. You know, they certainly took, like, that.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the end here, both the setup for the next season of Creature Commandos and also the end credit scene very briefly? So with the setup, we get a new team with the bride on the team. We've got G.I. Robot is back. That's pretty fun.
Jacked up.
That's exciting. King Shark, not voiced by Sylvester Stallone, voiced by Diedrich Bader, but that's all right. Diedrich Bader is great. We've also got Nosferatu, who showed up earlier on. I'm forgetting the name of the mummy character, but he's like King Lalas or something like that. He's a classic DC Comics character who was in the Creature Commandos originally, and he's just sitting there and not knitting. He's crocheting is what
crocheting,
he's doing.
Yeah.
And we've also got Weasel and Dr. Phosphorus. So, I don't know. Fun mix. Happy to see
you. We got Brother Weeze back and, you know, the Phos. But I just, it was so anticlimactic to be like, hey, guess what? We got some of your favorites back again.
Well, my hope is, and I know this is going to sound kind of mean, but apparently the way this was done was like, and we've talked about this here on the podcast before, but for anybody who wasn't listening or doesn't remember, James Gunn wrote this on spec just sort of like as an exercise, then got hired as DC Studios exec. And he's like, great, this is already done. Let's greenlight it. And reportedly, he pretty much passed it off to Dean Laurie, who is one of the showrunners of Harley Quinn, as well as an animation team. Obviously, he was involved in giving input, but he was pretty elated with the process of like, great, I handed it to you and you did what I thought was a great job with it. My hope is they've said in advance they want to wait for him to write another season. I hope they don't. I hope they're just like, he's like, here's an outline for season two. Go with it. Because Dean Laurie does a great job on the Harley Quinn show. The animation team is really good. So I think we could overall get a better second season if he hands it off to somebody else and lets them do the work and get a writing staff to really think about it.
Let me ask you a question, though.
Yeah, please.
Let's say they get all these new guys and then they double down on how depressing it is. And it's every character is another flashback. Their life is horrible, miserable. And at the end of the season, they fuck up the thing and it's the same status quo. Would you come back for a third season?
I mean, here's the thing. If they really fuck up the show for a second season, I would not like that. Like, that's my hard stance on that.
No, but would you watch season three even?
I don't know. Probably because we do a podcast about it. But otherwise, I wouldn't necessarily want to. I don't have a big
problem. What would it take for you to walk away?
I don't have as big of a problem as you guys about the negative, dark backstories. I just want to see them connect in some way to what's going on.
Yeah, agreed. I would love that. We're not getting any of that.
Yeah. Well, and I think the bigger thing is it felt like this show had a lot of potential and ideas on the table. Yep. And it just was overwhelmed by that, perhaps. And it ended up just not being about all of that stuff, and it felt a little thin by the
teased.
End of it.
I felt like we were teased with hope, and they were like, no, man, life's shit. What are you doing?
Yeah, and I don't like that as a guiding principle for any story, really. Like, I think people think that in their lives without stories.
Yeah.
So, like, stories should tell us something else. Yeah. So, like, you want to see different choices made because there's plenty of cruel people in everyone's lives. So, like, that I just that maybe that's my taste, but I don't like that as a takeaway from a story. And that really feels like what this was trying to do. I also think it felt like, based on the way the Bride Alana fight was, that it was like a Western. It was like a gunslinger end. And there are a lot of Westerns where it's like, yep, it's hard out here and everyone kills everyone. And so that's like a genre move, and that's interesting, but they don't even commit to it. It just feels like they used it right at the end, and there was so much other detritus from the rest of the season built around it that maybe that's how they got here, but it felt like it just was so muddled that it was hard to even be like, ah, yes, a Western makes sense for these characters.
Yeah. Just to talk about the last scene very briefly. So we mentioned it before, but Frankenstein is alive. He's being nursed back to health by, I believe it's
another old lady.
I believe it's the old lady who had Zac Efron on her phone screen in the first episode because it was voiced by Maria Bakalova again. But I want to take a little bit of issue because I watched this without the subtitles several times, and I thought what she was saying was that she was serving him spider dropping soup, which is pretty funny and weird, but it turns out it's sparrow dropping soup, and I feel like that's not as funny.
Well, that's a weird line to kind of make in the sand there and be like, oh, this isn't as funny, because sparrow dropping soup is more commonly accessible that you could make.
That's what I'm saying. What do you think though? Like, because I think spider dropping soup is much funnier than sparrow dropping soup. Pete, care to respond?
Yeah, I disagree. I think it's a fun, kooky choice that's like, wait a second.
Kooky.
That's comedy. But I also think that sparrow drop, as someone who didn't mishear it numerous times and then look over my shoulder as I was watching it because of the audio issues, I think that it was, it made sense and was silly enough that I was like, oh, that's fun. And I think that's something that, you know.
Well, and you like it because you like to start meals with a little, some sparrow dropping soup for your friends, for my boys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can I get around a sparrow dropping soup for my boys? It's an aperitif.
Aperitif it up.
Yeah, I mean, that spider dropping is more heightened and weird, for sure.
But it's also... Thank you, Justin.
It's also a weird, like, we're right back to where we started. Nothing has changed. The shit show continues.
The sparrow shit show.
Well, yeah, I think it was just, I don't know. I didn't have too much of a problem with it because it's just like a comedy beat at the end.
But he's going to take that old lady's dog and maybe murder her. You know what I mean?
It is very similar to the end credit scene from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, where it's just Peter Quill and his grandpa eating cereal. And then it says the legendary Star-Lord will return. Had the same exact rhythm as that.
Do you know how many spiders you would have to follow around to get enough droppings for a soup?
That's what I thought was so funny was the work. I appreciated it.
You appreciated the extra work?
I lived in my uncle, who I went jello hunting with. I lived in his haunted house for a couple years, and I spent all day cleaning up spider shit. It was just everywhere. It's so messy.
And they
very tiny
cobwebs. Is it just cobwebs you're talking about?
No. Spiders, in my experience, leave human-sized poops, which I don't know where they come from.
I don't think that's a spider problem. I don't think that's a spider problem.
No. My uncle, who I lived in a haunted house with, told me it was spiders.
Clean up this spider shit. So I just stepped in it. Disgusting.
Well, any other thoughts about this episode or this show before we wrap up Creature Commandos for probably 2 years or so?
I think I've said a lot anyway about what my thoughts on this.
Well, just one last thought then, or looking forward thought. Now that we do have this aperitif for the DCU out of the way, how are you feeling going into Superman? Does this lessen your excitement? Does it heighten your excitement? Keep it even? Where are you at temp-wise?
I feel like this actually is more of a digestif from the previous DCU, or at least the James Gunn portions of it. It feels like something to be like, ah, yes, a little finishing before we get, because I doubt Superman is going to have a lot of these ideas or themes or tones in that movie based on everything James Gunn said about it. So, and also I think it's telling that he wrote this before he had the job. It's literally not a kickoff creatively of the new DCU. It's something that was left over from a previous idea of what it should be. So it definitely doesn't feel like I thought it was going to be a kickoff. We did. It actually, I think, is not.
Justin, when you say a digestif, do you mean they like a tapioca pudding type of situation? Or
yeah, your meals are all. Do you eat with people without teeth? What's happening with you? Are you? It feels like you're only getting hospital food. Are you living in a retirement home?
I think we all are, right?
No. I don't think so.
No, not everybody is.
Start a meal with Jell-O, finish it with a horse bone. That's
I'll tell
living.
You, this doesn't...
It makes me worried, to answer your question.
It makes you worried about Superman?
Yeah.
Interesting. It doesn't make me worried about Superman necessarily, because to Justin's point, I think he's probably going to go for a very different tone there. But it does make me a little worried about James Gunn building this entire thing around him, when what I think I need to do if I'm going to put on my armchair studio producer runner guy is, that's the technical term, I believe.
Yeah,
is,
armchair.
Like I was saying with season two, I think he needs to step back a little bit and think about the overarching thing rather than all of these projects come from him. He's writing or directing all of them. He is the sole source of news on the internet for everything about the DCU. Like, part of being the boss is delegating responsibility, and I want to see a little bit more of that going forward.
One thing that I'm worried about, when you kind of think about his last couple of movies, right? You got Guardians 2, kind of sad and depressing with the father stuff. You got Guardians 3, very sad and depressing. And then this year, also kind of sad. I'm really worried about what he's going to be doing to us moving forward. Like, this, we might be buckling up for a really fucking sad DC time.
I don't know. I think Superman has to be hopeful and positive, and then the contrast is going to be the other stuff. Like, Lanterns is definitely going to be sad and depressing, yeah, with two sad sack lanterns on Earth solving a mystery that's probably going to rock their whole world. And then we'll get other things like that. Peacemaker season 2, I'm sure we'll dive into some upsetting themes and ideas as well. But I don't know. I still feel hopeful. And granted, I was tricked once already by a Superman movie, but I am hopeful that that is going to be a movie full of hope. So we
should. And that was a pyramid scheme, right? Like, you went from the Superman movie to like donating all of your life savings, and you kind of bought this.
I mean,
time
I kind
share.
Of have in terms of comics, if you look behind me and stuff. So yes,
yeah,
it's all Lego. I got my life savings.
It's all in Legos. All of my life savings.
Yeah. Hard to
smart
turn that
move,
back,
by the way. Smart move.
Yeah, you're going to move to retire in Legoland.
Oh, that's
money.
The dream.
Where Legos are,
yeah,
money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you grind up Legos, you can make Jell-O out of them, I believe, as well.
Yeah,
because they're true, also, yeah, made of horse bones. And I think we could probably wrap up there. If
did there used to be more horse bones in the world? It feels like it's a limited, finite resource.
Yeah. I think, wasn't there that article in the New York Times, I believe, about the scarcity of horse bones? The headline is "The Scarcity of Horse Bones." So, yeah, if you want to Google it,
there's still wild horses running around, man.
Not as many.
Not
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. We also do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about the DCU. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and support the show. I don't know, a bunch of social places. ComicBookClubLive.com.
Check it out.
For this podcast and many more. Until next time, Dad, delegate.
Wow, direct shot. No more gilding the lily. It's just, yes, we are your sons, and you need to have help working
legally,
on
we're
this.
Not allowed to say that.
Alex has crossed the
Rubicon.
Yes,
as our lawyer, Pete, is advising me. I'll delete that portion of the podcast.
Okay, smart, smart.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, Ryan Reynolds here. It's a new year, and you know what that means. No, not the diet. Resolutions. A way for us all to try and do a little bit better than we did last year. And my resolution, unlike Big Wireless, is to not be a raging a**hole and raise the price of wireless on you every chance I get. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited. See mintmobile.com for details.